Welcome to Right Spokane Perspective with your host, Tim.
And Shannon.
It's opinion, fact, information, and your alert system. Stay tuned and enjoy the show. And welcome to Right Spokane Perspective on this Thursday episode. We are here with Jonathan Bingle. He is running for Congress. He's also on the City of Spokane's City Council. And we're going to probably talk a little bit about that because it is Right Spokane Perspective. But we'll jump into that conversation after inspiration.
Our inspiration today is pride and deception. Loving God, thank you for your gentle nudging correction. With my shoulders slumped, I murmured those difficult words. I'd been so arrogant, thinking I could do it all on my own. For months, I'd been enjoying successful work projects, and the accolades lulled me into thrusting my capabilities and rejecting God's leading. It took a challenging project for me to realize I wasn't as smart as I thought I was. My proud heart had deceived me into believing I didn't need God's help. The powerful kingdom of Edom received discipline from God for its pride. Edom was located amongst the mountainous terrain, making her seemingly invulnerable to enemies. Edom was also a wealthy nation, situated at the center of a strategic trade route and rich in copper, a highly valued commodity in the ancient world. It was full of good things, yet also full of pride. Its citizens believed their kingdom was invincible, even as they oppressed God's people. But God used the prophet Obadiah to tell them of his judgment. Nations would rise up against Edom, and the once powerful kingdom would be defenseless and humiliated. Pride deceives us into thinking we can live our life on our terms without God. It makes us feel invulnerable to authority, correction, and weakness. But God calls us to humble ourselves before Him. As we turn from our pride and choose repentance, God will lead us toward total trust in Him. Heavenly Father, protect us from pride, and please give us a humble heart. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
Amen. Well, sounded like a story about the United States of America, maybe even Washington State or the city of Spokane. And I don't know if it's Edom or if it's just dumb, but we're going to have a conversation about the direction we're headed here. I think with Jonathan Bingle in the city of Spokane, as he is on our city council and also a candidate for Congress, because we have gotten very arrogant, especially in our spending and the direction we're going with our society, our culture, and government taking the lead in that these days. It seems like they're leading us in the wrong direction. So welcome to the show, Jonathan.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, let's start off talking about city council, because we have issues coming up where, you know, we're the highest tax city on this side of the state, and we have a new mayor that's looking at raising our taxes again to fill a budget hole. And it seems like the spending's out of control, and it's not a money issue that's, you know, revenue side, it's a spending issue.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the same thing you see with, you know, the federal budget is that, you know, they keep saying, hey, we need more money. And realistically, it might just be, well, maybe you just need to do less stuff. You know, I don't think you need all that money. Maybe you do less stuff. And I think that's the situation we're in with the city, as well as, you know, the federal government is, you know, you might have a budget deficit, but doesn't mean you need to raise taxes. It means you probably need to right size the government.
Yeah. So on the city side, we see the budgets increasing. We see it at the state level. I think historic budgets. So we're not talking about just inflation. Our government is growing faster than inflation. And right now, inflation is crushing the middle class and small businesses. So a state budget that was $35 billion 10 years ago is now $72 billion.
Right.
We see the same thing. City government has, you know, a lot of areas of it have doubled in the last decade. And of course, our federal government's, you know, printing, I think, Deutschmarks now.
Absolutely.
So what do you think on the policy side in Spokane, what are we going to see coming up that is going to be, you know, changing that trajectory, or are they just going to ask for more money to fill the hole?
Yeah, I think they're just going to ask for more money. And realistically, if we were to start with spending, we should start with our homelessness spending. I mean, from the general fund, we spent almost $13 million last year on homelessness.
What? It's like $300,000 per homeless individual is what we're spending, somewhere along those lines.
I don't think it's that much in the city, but I mean it's close to $100,000
per. Well, if you took federal, state, county, and city money combined, that's about where we're at. Because the city budget doesn't pay for the welfare benefits and the cell phones and all the other things that the homeless individuals get.
Yeah.
We're spending three, four, five times what your average city household residents make.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm as compassionate as the next guy, right? I was a pastor for 10 years. We did missionary work. And I mean, it breaks my heart when I see broken people. It really does. Mm-hmm. But oftentimes what we're doing is we're not fixing brokenness, is we're enabling the brokenness. And that's what we're doing a lot in the city of Spokane. And I actually don't hate Housing First in and of itself. If it came with, hey, by the way, come as you are, because this is what the church does, right? Come as you are. As Jesus says, it's not healthy people who need a doctor, it's sick people. Come as you are, but once you get here, here's the things you have to do for us to continue helping you. We're going to search you. We're going to take away all your drugs, all of your alcohol, everything like that. We're going to destroy it. You're going to get employment. You're going to get mentorship. You're going to get into these programs. And if
training,
you don't,
maybe.
Absolutely. And then if you decide that you don't want to do this, then you're on your own, right? Mm-hmm. Because we are offering a hand here, but we're not just giving you everything, right? Which is, you hear this old expression, you know, we want to give a hand up and not a handout. I think this is the idea.
Yeah, it seems like we're similarly how we're dealing with our criminal element that's out there is that we'll just give you benefits and you don't have to work. So that means you can continue to do drugs. We're going to provide your housing. We're going to make sure the housing is clean for you because you don't have to clean up after yourself. So we enable all these activities, whether it's homelessness, drug addiction, or criminal activity.
Yeah. And this is actually something, getting into my congressional run, one of the things I would try to do at the federal level is actually create a definition between voluntarily homeless and involuntarily homeless, right? So somebody who's involuntarily homeless is, you know, the 70-year-old woman who's retired. She's on a fixed income. Her rent went up $500 or $600, which is happening in the city of Spokane. I have lots of sympathy for that person, want to help them out. But the 25-year-old drug addict who we're offering services to, we're offering help to, and they continually reject it, that's voluntarily homeless at that point. And we have no responsibility to you anymore. We have tried. You have rejected it. So it's either, you can have a bus pass and go somewhere else, but you're not welcome here in the city anymore.
Right. Well, when you and I were in our 20s, which it seems like a long time ago from where we're sitting.
Yeah.
But it really is not that long ago. When we were in our 20s, there was requirements to work from the federal government. The states did not get HUD money. They did not get federal money if they didn't fulfill a work requirement. Yep. Like, okay, if you're an able-bodied person, when you were in your mid-20s and a white male, there's no way there was any subsidies for you when we were in our 20s. Yeah. Now we're subsidizing huge chunks of that labor population that really, I mean, when we talk about city budgets and government and small businesses that can't find labor, where is all the labor? Why did we have the lowest labor participation rate just a couple of years ago since 1947?
I know.
It's not because we finished off a world war. It's because we've subsidized
the
war on America, of the opioid crisis.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I'm actually really excited about a program I have that's coming forward where, you know, a lot of people said that the unions wouldn't allow it, but I got the unions to sign off on us actually hiring people who are homeless to be picking up trash downtown, to be doing graffiti. I know they said that you couldn't do it. I just really pursued it, and we got her done.
That's exactly what we needed.
So that's something that's coming forward here
soon? That's something that will be coming forward soon. I have a proposal coming forward. And actually, one of the things that I hope to have happen is that we have some labor supervisors out there from the unions, because then if we see somebody who's really busting their, you know, their bottom and really trying to, you know, get after it and working hard, hey, we've got a job for you, right? That has a pension and benefits. Like, you can turn your life around today if you want. So that's,
and if you get some of those labor folks involved, and one of the mistakes I think that we've done in government with education is we fund so much education. You know, we talk about the high tech jobs and STEM fields and all that. There's no reason why business can't do that. It used to be the union's role to train the electricians, the plumbers, and all those things. We didn't, you know, do all this other stuff that was government subsidized first. So individuals that are out there, they've gotten off of drugs, they're cleaning up out there. You could find labor to connect those guys too. It's not just city workers where these folks should end up if they get off the drugs.
Absolutely. And again, it comes with benefits, right? You get health insurance, you get dental, right? You get all kinds of things that are coming with this. And again, a steady career from an employer that's not going to go away, right? The government will always be there. If it's not, we have much bigger problems.
Right. Well, but it needs to be a smaller government.
Yeah, I totally agree. But I mean, there's a future out there if you want it. And that's the message I'm trying to get out to people who are broken, which is there is a better way, and I want to help offer you a better way. So
yeah, that's a great thing. You know, it's like when the churches allowed people to come in, of course, we've kind of zoned the churches out of being able to set up their own programs for drug addicted and homeless because our government says that they want to do it instead of the church.
Yeah.
But I think having, whether it's the church or the government, when someone goes back out into the world, if the world is a completely corrupted, drug-addled place, it's going to be hard to succeed. So on the other side of that, the homelessness and the issues, how do we stop the flow? I mean, we're talking about a crisis, over 100,000 people in the United States dying. We're talking about the number one killer of individuals between 18 and 45. We're at war with China and Mexico.
Yes.
And we're just, we're subsidizing it. So what do we do on the criminal element side of it? When you're talking about Congress and subsidizing welfare programs, Social Security disability, how many drug addicts destroyed themselves on drugs that are now using Social Security? What do we do on the criminal side with law enforcement? Because I know at the city level, they're going to threaten our police here soon if we don't raise taxes.
Yeah. So I actually went to the border about 3.5 weeks ago, maybe a month ago, and I spent 4 days with Border Patrol to learn about what was going on down there. And 90% of the opioids that are coming into the United States are coming across the southern border, right? So there's a couple things we need to do down there. Number one, immediately end the way that asylum is happening today. People come in and say, I fear for my safety. Immediately you get asylum, right? And so we need to reform that process. We need to limit the amount of people who can be granted asylum coming into the United States. We need to finish building the wall. And we need to codify the Remain in Mexico program, because right now it's just an executive action, which is why President Biden was able to overturn it. Those kinds of things, if we do that, we would actually really significantly decrease the amount of drugs coming across the southern border, because right now Border Patrol is so focused on the administrative work, they actually can't patrol the border.
Right. So we know that there's a lot of drugs coming from Mexico and other places in the world. Mm-hmm. And I actually know people from other countries.
Yeah.
And what's really interesting is they don't have a drug problem where those drugs are coming from. Mm-hmm. Why is that? Well, it's because they don't subsidize it. If you don't work, you don't eat, if you're doing these drugs, they'll literally throw you out in the street and let you die. Yeah. They're not going to help you at all. So how do we take a different approach on like subsidizing the war on drugs that we're, because it really, we're housing the drug addicts.
Yep.
We're housing the drug dealers. We've handcuffed the police. What about drug testing for welfare, something like that?
Yeah, no, I'm totally on board with that. And again, I think this all comes back to, as we were talking before the show, I think most of society's ills come from the fact that the United States government is involved in far too many things, right? It's not that we have an income problem at the federal government, we have a spending problem, right?
Right.
And it's the same thing with, you know, American households. We don't have an income problem here. Typically, we have a spending problem, typically.
Right. Well, now, our government spending aside, problem is so... Is,
yeah, totally.
Is, yeah.
Inflation aside, I think it's generally true that Americans, who are the most blessed country, you know, in the history of the world, highest incomes in the history of the world, right? These kinds of things. Typically, it's not the income that's the problem. It's the amount of spending that we have, right?
That's right. Credit card debt.
Absolutely. All kinds of things. Most people here are, you are capable of living within your means. You just don't want to, right? Which is a whole different thing. But if the United States government stopped spending on all these programs, then you would see a lot of, you know, drug addicts not being drug addicts anymore, because if the federal government isn't daddy, right? If the federal government isn't taking care of
the kids. There
wasn't
a free sandwich on every corner.
If the federal government wasn't stepping in, you know, and allowing, you know, the single mom to have everything, you know, she needs, where you actually needed the father and the mother in the home, then you would see a lot of this changing, because drug addiction, I actually think, is a luxury issue, right? Similar with like suicide. You don't see this in poorer countries because the family is so needed. Otherwise, grandma and grandpa don't eat, or your kids don't eat, or whatever it is. When you have that sense of purpose and people depending on you, it totally changes your actions. But because the government has pervaded all of these spaces, all of these social spaces in a way it was never intended to, where the church was supposed to be the one providing all of these services, once government became God in many ways, what ended up happening is we saw these issues rising.
Yeah, well, God and the income, you know, that's a huge thing. Okay, we got to take a break. We're going to run out the door for a quick break. We're going to come back again with Jonathan Bingle. He is a City of Spokane council member and also a candidate for Congress. BingleForAmerica.com. Again, BingleForAmerica.com. Don't go anywhere. Thank you for listening to Right Spokane Perspective. We are only on the air and podcast because you support this program, you the listeners. We are listener supported. Keep us on the air to keep all these interviews and shows going. Please go to RightSpokanePerspective.com. There's a donate button there. Or you can send your donation to Right Spokane Perspective LLC, P.O. Box 7620-99207. Thanks, and back to the show. And welcome back to Right Spokane Perspective. Yes, we are here again this Thursday with Jonathan Bingle for Congress. It's bingleforamerica.com. So we jumped off into the break, we were talking a lot about spending, the spending problem that's really a political drug addiction, really, that is subsidizing the drug crisis in America. But we're subsidizing a lot more than the drug crisis in America. We are subsidizing a lot of things in other parts of the world. And it's almost like I look at this political landscape and I see politicians that run for office, and some of the most powerful special interest group that fund campaigns will actually fund both campaigns.
Right.
And we're doing a similar thing, I think, in other places in the world where we're funding the both sides of a war. Where are we as a country so immoral that we're just killing people from different nations with spending and old military equipment from our country?
Yes. And you actually see this. I'm a big supporter of Israel, but you see this in that in the Israeli Hamas war right now, where we were originally, you know, giving loans to Israel so that they could purchase the weapons necessary for their national defense. Joe Biden started seeing, you know, voters in Dearborn, Michigan starting to hate what he was doing. So then he had to rapidly change on a dime and start supporting Hamas. And so somehow in this war, we have funded both sides.
Well, but how did it start? Yeah. I think it started because the largest sponsor of global terrorism is Iran.
Yes.
And we freed up a whole bunch of money for Iran before anything happened in Gaza.
Correct. Well, and this actually goes back to Obama, right? Where we're actually like sending pallets of cash to Iran, which is just absolutely insane. So yeah, again, all of this is Iran is the king in that area when it comes to the terror that's happening, right? They're funding Hezbollah, Palestinian Authority, you know, Hamas, all of these groups, the Houthis, right? These are all like proxies for Iran, because Iran really does hate the Jews. They want to get rid of the Jews bad, right? Yeah. And so they're using all these different pawns on it to make it happen.
And so does Hamas. They want to get rid of the Jews, you know, from the river to the sea, right?
Correct. That's their chant. Yeah.
And what's interesting, too, is we actually sent in a whole bunch of money, other countries, too, but a lot of the money from America, so that they could have modern plumbing, you know, and we saw pictures in the media months back.
And they're
back.
Digging it out to make bombs, to make rockets.
Right. Or they're not even installing it. Right. They're making rockets out of sewage pipes.
Yes, correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is the thing where I get really frustrated. There's a group that comes into city council every week, the Party for Socialism and Liberation, right? They're huge Hamas supporters.
Justice for All.
Absolutely.
Justice for All.
Yep.
Is that a name change or just a...
No, I believe that's his given name. He has a brother that I think is Peace for All. I think it's his given name.
So it's genetic activism.
It's, yeah, okay. It's, and the last name is Forral, not like, you know, Forall.
Okay. So that's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, so I've
just watched the city council meetings, and I've noticed the screaming at city council, which I think violates decorum.
Sure
so
does.
It's kind of interesting to see at city hall, but we see it all across America too.
Yeah.
From the universities and.
Yeah, the unfortunate thing is that when you're subsidizing wars like that, I trust Israel far more than I trust, you know, Ukraine. But somehow Ukraine is getting five times the amount of money that we're sending to Israel, and Ukraine is a horribly corrupt country. Now again, Russia is a great threat to us. Russia is a great foe of ours. And so I understand why Ukraine is getting funded. But also, we need to be doing serious audits to make sure that the money that we're sending over there is actually something that's getting spent on defense.
Well, I think it's really strange that, you know, everybody's got to have the Ukraine flag on their social media.
Totally.
You've got all this pressure from Congress when I think there was a presidential campaign. I wasn't a big fan of it, but I think it was Mitt Romney that talked about the threat of Russia.
Yeah.
And I think it was Obama that said
1980s wants their foreign policy back.
1980s wants their foreign policy back. But here we are.
Yeah.
We're spending all this money. And of course, Ukraine can't logistically win against Russia. There's 100 million more people in Russia.
Yep.
So the insanity that we're spending all this money, it seems like we're killing lots of people. We're getting rid of some old military equipment by giving it to them. But on the national stage, there's a way to stop this war. It's just like the war on drugs. Quit funding it, right?
Yeah.
If we take away the money, the war ends. But instead, our president and his foreign policy said, no, I think it was just last week or two, and he said, oh, no, we want Ukraine to join the UN.
I know.
Nuts.
To join NATO. Yeah.
Or NATO.
NATO. Yeah. The UN should be dissolved. We should... demolish the building and salt the earth, you know, and just be done with the UN. But yeah. Radically anti-Semitic organization, by the way.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely crazy.
But oh, yeah. Well, when you have an organization like the UN where you've got the leaders in terrorism are on the Human Rights Council.
On the Human Rights Commission. Just, yeah. You're a joke. It's you're a joke. Yeah, absolutely.
A very sick, disgusting, twisted joke that's getting lots of people killed. But yes.
Absolutely. And actually actively funding terror campaigns around the world, which is pretty incredible as well. So,
right, right. So what do we do about telling the president you don't have the authority? When did we see Congress declare war anywhere?
No, we haven't. And honestly, this is just because I want to be very careful because I'm not there. But it seems to be very cowardly actions from Congress where they always want to be able to blame it on somebody else. And this is the frustration I have in politics is that very few people actually want to do something once they get there. They want to get there and then blame everybody else for why it's not happening, right? Yeah. And I get it. I'm in a super minority on the city council, okay? Mm-hmm. And so my frustration with the Washington State Legislature and Congress and all these things, oh, well, you know, it's always, no, stop it. Okay. I'm in a 5-2. Okay. I have to convince a lot of people to make something happen. Right. We still got drug laws passed when the state failed with the Blake decision.
That's right?
And the state basically ended up adopting the laws that we wrote. Right. Very proud of that. We got it to be criminalized to be in the parks after dark again. And shootings went from 38 last year to zero. Right.
So far this year.
Well, not since then. Right. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's been almost an entire full year and there have been zero since we passed these laws. You know, the development fees that I was able to keep low by, you know, just engaging in the negotiations, really hammering people for them wanting to destroy development, those kinds of things. You can get stuff done if you're motivated enough, you know.
If you just do it. Yeah.
If you just do it. Right.
But, you know, when you're in Congress, I had to vote for the spending because, you know, there's money coming for a bridge.
Totally.
You know, there's always that stuff. You know, there's these massive omnibus bills.
Yep, totally.
And we see all this spending, and our federal government is going to be spending, I think just in a couple of years, more money to service our debt than we are on keeping our country safe and our military spending.
And this is actually the biggest point of my campaign is what we're going to do with the budget if I got elected or what I would push for, is we are going to absolutely go Javier Milei on the budget here in the United States. We're just going to slash departments. We're going to eliminate the EPA. We'll eliminate the Department of Education. I mean, we'll just be done with all this. We're going to eliminate all the market manipulating tax credits and those kinds of things. But at the same time, and we're going to reduce the corporate tax rate to 15%. We're going to eliminate all of this spending that's coming in. I have a huge list of things that I would
I want to kind of pause there for just a second because you're going really fast for all the listeners to absorb this.
Yes.
Because the reality is if you slash government, you know, and a lot of government spending is public-private partnerships, which is, by the way, fascism. I always remind everybody because that's not, you know, if you can't distinguish private dollars and government money, you're commingling funds. That's what private partnerships do. Government's not supposed to be doing that. So if you slash those jobs, those individuals that have certain talents need to go into manufacturing or the corporate world.
Yep.
How do you get them those jobs? You take away all of the investment into China and foreign governments where they're producing jobs and bring some manufacturing back to the United States. So that's how that balance works.
Yeah. I mean, that would be really difficult though, considering China is so cheap on the labor front, whereas the United States is very, very expensive manufacturing.
Not if you tariff the same way China tariffs American goods.
Sure.
Right?
I mean, and I'm certainly open to this conversation. I think the bigger point is when you decrease taxes, right? They were at 33%. Donald Trump got them to 21%, which is great. Still not codified, by the way, or it's sunsetting. We need to make sure that that's permanent. But I would actually lower it to 15% because then what ends up happening is you have these corporations with far more dollars to invest, not just big corporations, but small mom and pop shops. You know, my business is a small business, a small corporation, and I pay corporate taxes on that. If you lower that, I have more money to hire more people to do those kinds of things. Back to my budget proposal, even though we're slashing government spending, we're actually increasing the amount of benefits that people can get through like Social Security because we switch from defined benefit plan to a defined contribution plan, which now you have some options in the way you're doing it. We're still mandating that you put money aside for retirement, but instead of it being a defined benefit plan, which is just a Ponzi scheme, now you can invest the money, you're gonna see the return. And we do a net increase of defense spending by $135 billion over the next 10 years because while we have the most advanced and the most powerful military in the world, it is in itself sort of out of date because we haven't made serious investments in it since Reagan, really.
Well, and we did. I know that there's an F-35, I think it is, that we paid for a whole lot of money for those fleets And it sounds like only like 20%. I heard a report that was it was a very small number of those were actually ready to serve the American military.
Yeah.
They're just, I mean, they can fly. They just can't do anything else. Maybe some of them. I don't know. Oh, I mean, I know they're Boeing planes. Hopefully the doors stay on, you know, that sort of thing. But I mean, there's another big thing. I mean, the tax breaks we give to certain corporations, we did that in Washington State. And then what happened? A bunch of Boeing jobs went to what? South Carolina?
I know. Absolutely. Well, and the other thing is that government always, again, because people like me who are in office are offered a lot by people who have very special interests, right? Yeah. And you see, we pass these climate commitment acts and those kinds of things, but the top five polluters in the state of Washington are exempted from it. You know, how does that happen?
How does that happen?
Right?
Right.
You know, and so
but your gas prices are going up.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Right. And then places like our waste energy facility is going to get shut down because while it's actually a better thing for the environment because it looks scary, they're going to shut it down because they're going to add $8 million a year in expenses for us to keep it open. It gets shut down. That powers 11,000 homes a year.
Yeah.
Where are we going to get that energy?
And we don't have to bury the garbage.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah, no, it gets far connected. Yeah. Absolutely. That's the frustrating thing to me about government is you can never have an honest conversation about anything because you're so beholden to the people who've gotten you into office. It's just frustrating.
Well, if you don't do it, Greenpeace will protest. Right? Except the leader of Greenpeace is now turned away from that group and said,
totally.
Wait a minute, this actually isn't good for the
environment. For the record, 49 out of 50 states consider the waste-to-energy facility to be a renewable source of energy. Washington State is the only one that doesn't.
Actually, most other states consider hydropower a renewable energy, and Washington State doesn't.
Well, Washington State does, depending on the context, right? Because if you look at the Department of Commerce, right, they say that we're 90% renewable energy because they count the dams. Then when they want to talk about carbon, it's like, oh, we're only 30% renewable. And it's like, somebody give me a clear definition of what this is.
Because they don't count the dams. Well,
correct.
It's very political, and a lot of it's about money changing hands, greasing palms between corporations, government entities, and political action committees, right? Because it's the PACs that are really driving this. It's not individual contributions to campaigns that really drive the conversation.
Yeah.
It's the PACs. It's Organization for America. It's, you know, the multitude of organizations funded by Gates and Soros.
Well,
and
the
Koch brothers and the Koch brothers. You got to have both of those.
Respectfully, I disagree with this, right? Because I had a lot of special interest groups donate to my campaign, right? And I appreciated those dollars. I am good on housing policy, so I understand why the home builders and the realtors wanted to donate to me. But if they call me and they tell me, hey, we've got this policy we want you to support, and it's something that's fundamentally against my beliefs, not going to do it.
Yep.
And this is the problem. I don't think it's the special interest money that's the problem. It's the people who are getting elected that are the problem.
Yeah.
Because if you don't actually have the ability to stand on your morals, then you're going to be swayed no matter who's giving you the money.
Well, and it's also because we think, you know, I think that Ocasio-Cortez, her morals come from a certain activist place. I don't think she's really, I think she's mostly fake. But where do those morals come from?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Judeo-Christian values is obviously where our country was the foundation.
Yeah.
But if a person wants to be an atheist, you know, that's fine too. Because a lot of the people are saying now that people that are talking in, you know, Judeo-Christian terms, like I know your campaign does a lot, they are acting like, oh, they want some theocracy and all that. But that's actually against your values.
Correct.
Where do your values come from aside from biblical values?
Correct. So my values are 100% mostly influenced, right, or 100% first influenced by who I am because I understand I'm a citizen of heaven before I'm a citizen of the United States, right? So that's first. Second is going to be the Constitution of the United States. Those are the two things that are sort of my guiding light when it comes to how am I going to make decisions moving forward. And my campaign is themed in American revival, and one of my three big pillars is restoring the Judeo-Christian morality that our country was built on because that's how we got the freedom that we have.
Yeah. Well, definitely, if you look at the Constitution, your idea of malaying the budget at the federal level, I think that's how you say his name is Malay.
Yeah, that's right.
So we'll just call it a malaying the federal budget. You can do that by just following the Constitution and demanding the other people that took an oath of office do the same. Mm-hmm. All right, folks, we're out of time for today, but I want to thank Jonathan Bingle for coming in the studio. Again, it's Jonathan Bingle. He is running for Congress. He's a city councilman. Look him up. It's bingleforamerica.com. And we're going to see how these congressional races go. We're going to have a lot more candidates in. This is a listener-funded enterprise, and we do this for you, the listeners. So do send in those donations so that we can keep all these interviews going of candidates so that you can be informed. You can share these podcasts with your friends, neighbors, congregation members, so they can be informed on who to vote for. Those elections are coming up real soon. We'll be with you folks again tomorrow.
Bye-bye.
You have been listening to Right Spokane Perspective. We are sponsored by Right Spokane Perspective LLC and made possible by advertisers you hear and contributions from listeners like you.